Morning shir should be a zchus lerefuah shlema for Avraham Abba ben Shendel, who is having surgery today, as well as a zchus lerefuah shlema for David Yehuda ben Leah, who is also undergoing a surgery in a little less than an hour. And we hope that our Divrei Torah will be a zchus for both of them, that they should have a complete refuah in the procedures that they are having. I always feel uncomfortable every year when it comes to Lag BaOmer, because most of the things that people talk about when it comes around the season of Lag BaOmer are mystical topics that mean absolutely nothing to me, because I know nothing about such areas of thought. So we try to connect to the Torah of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, but we need to remind ourselves that Reb Shimon ben Yochai was not only a mystical personality, but he was also one of the greatest of the Tanoim. And we have so many important statements from Reb Shimon ben Yochai that are instructive to us in so many different aspects of our lives. And that's why I wanted to take the shiur this morning in honor of Lag BaOmer, in honor of Reb Shimon bar Yochai, and go into one of the important passages that the Yerushalmi has in the name of Reb Shimon bar Yochai. So let's begin by way of introduction with the following. The Torah tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the entire world. We have in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, Parshas Bereishis, the Torah says all the different facets of creation. And finally, after all is said and done, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the last thing that he did was he created Adam HaRishon. And the way that is referred to in the Torah is, Vayihi HaAdam LeNefesh Chaya. And the human being was LeNefesh Chaya. How do you describe exactly what that means? Not so clear. Targum Onkelos there writes that V'havis ba'adam l'ruach memalala. The Targum Onkelos says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a nefesh in Adam HaRishon. What does it mean to have a nefesh? L'ruach memalala, a spirit that is able to talk. Which means that the advantage, the superiority of the human being over any other facet of creation is the fact that a human being has the ability to communicate, has the ability to use words. While many other parts of the creation are able to make noise, and they chirp, and they neigh, and in Australia they make other noises, as I said last week, all kinds of different things, and they sing and they hum, but a human being has the ability to do more than that. A human being has the ability to communicate with others by using their words, and it seems that that is something that is in a very important way, a defining characteristic of what it means to be a human being. Our mouths define us and everything that we're supposed to be doing. So there's an important Gemara, Maseches Pesachim, where the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, you look here in number Aleph, Le'olam al yotzi adam davar meguna mipiv. Every so often, we need to talk about negative things. It's the reality of life. Not everything is so rosy all the time. Not everything is always perfect. So we cannot just whitewash everything in the world. So the Gemara says, even when doing so, even when talking about something that may not be positive, we should do it in a way which is not as negative. Shehare akam hakasev. We know that every word in the Torah is carefully considered. We know that there's a very particular reason for every word and every letter in the Torah. In fact, when we have a word that has an extra letter, it's something that the Gemara spends time figuring out. Why is this word here? Why is that letter there? Why is a letter big? Why is a letter small? There's a very particular reason for everything. And yet here, the Gemara tells us that 8 extra letters were spent, Kedei shelo lehotzi davar meguna mipiv. Where do we find that? Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created all of the animals, it says, Min ha-behema ha-tahora, not when he created, it's when Noah was going into the Teva. He's told he should take min ha-behema ha-tahora, umin ha-behema asher einena tahora. It says he should take from the animals that are pure, and then you should take from the animals that are not as pure. Why don't you say from those that are tamei? So the Gemara says it uses a number of extra letters because instead of saying tamei, we may as well say einanu tahora. It's just a nicer, more refined way of speaking and expressing ourselves. And that's what the Gemara says. Even when we have to talk about negative aspects, even when we have to talk about things that don't make us so comfortable, there's a way to speak about it with refinement. So this is an interesting passage that you find in the Chovos HaLevavos. Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in the Chovos HaLevavos a story about Echad Min HaChasidim. Very often when he writes things from Echad Min HaChasidim, he does not identify who it is. And in different Svarim, you find that they ascribe these kinds of pitgamim, these kinds of sayings, to different greats over the generations. I saw one of the Svarim writes it was Eliyahu HaNavi. I don't know. Whoever it was someone very special. who had the following encounter with his students. Avar al nivlas hakela misarechas miot. He passed by on the street, and there was a carcass, a dead animal, a dead dog on the side of the road, and it was rotting, and it was putrid, it smelled. Ve'armulo talmidav, and the students who were there said, Kama misarechas nivela zos, how foul is this animal on the side of the road? Amar lahem, and this chassid turned back to the students, and he said, Kama levanim shineha. Wow, it's interesting that you notice something on the side of the road. I see that this carcass on the side of the road has very white teeth. V'nischartu al masha sipru begunusa. And they felt bad. Why did they only focus on the foul odor of this animal? Why not look at the white teeth? Now, that doesn't mean that we should not notice things that are wrong in our lives. We have to notice them, and we have to beware and be mindful of those things. But, however, he was pointing out to them that there are always two ways of looking at everything. And you could look at the dead animal on the side of the road and just be horrified by what you see. Or you can see the white teeth that are in the same animal. The kivanshu genai l'saper b'gnus ha-kelef meis. And what he was trying to instill into his Talmidim was that if there's this idea that you shouldn't even speak negatively about something like that, which is so obviously negative, kol shekein ba'adam chai, certainly when it comes to a human being who has feelings and thoughts. V'kivan shehu tov l'shabeach nivlas ha-kelef beloven shineha. If he can find a place to see something positive in the teeth of such an animal, kol shekein shehu chove l'fizeh l'shabeach adam maskil u'mevin. Sometimes we write a person off, but there's something good about that individual's personality as well. There's something good about what they've done in their lives that gives us an opportunity to celebrate and to praise as well. And therefore, the Chavos HaLevavos writes that this was an instructive story that really frames a way of a perspective in general, not only in that particular story, but in general, there are always two ways of looking at everything. I mention all of this because there's an amazing comment in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Very interesting comment. You know, human beings were created the way they were created, and we were not given a say in how we're supposed to look or how we were supposed to be formed. Maybe I would say it would make more sense if we had one ear instead of 2 ears or 3 ears instead of 2. We could have had many different ways in which we would have wanted or not wanted to be created. And yet, we weren't given a choice. But here, the Yerushalmi writes that Rav Shimon ben Yochai gave his opinion of how he thinks human beings should have been created, which is just a fascinating idea in the first place. Who asked for your opinion? But the Yerushalmi records the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Yochai that this is what he would have said. Rav Shimon ben Yochai kidaite. To Rav Shimon ben Yochai Amar, let's see in number Gimel. Ilu havino kayim al tura de Sinai. If I was there on the occasion of Har Sinai, b'shaita de isyavis Torah liYisrael, at the time that the Torah was given to the Jewish people, so we learn this today not only because Rav Shimon ben Yochai is celebrated on Lag BaOmer, but also because we are coming up to the time of Kabbalas HaTorah. So he says, if I was there on Har Sinai when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to the Jewish people, havina mitbai kuma rachmana, I would have asked and beseeched HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the following request, de yizbri lebar nasha train pumin. I would have asked that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provide all of us with 2 mouths. Can you imagine? I would have asked that HaKadosh Baruch Hu create us with 2 mouths. One, chad dehavi lai ba'araisa, one that would be set aside only for the engagement in Torah, that I would speak divrei Torah, that I would learn divrei Torah, that I would talk about holy things. That's what that mouth would be specifically designated for. V'chad, and the other one, de'avidlei kol tzorchei. The other one would be for everything else. So all of my business, all of my conversations, everything else would be used with the other mouth. That was Reb Shimon Yochai's comment. Chaval, I wasn't at Har Sinai because that's what I would have asked for. Interesting. Along comes Reb Shimon Yochai, he says, as I am experiencing life and I'm seeing the way people are, I take my comment back. I take my comment back. Skip the parentheses here, I just wrote the translation. Chazar, he really retracted his statement and he said, Uma ein chad hu leis alma yachal kaim min deltura delay. The amount of negativity, the amount of foul speech that people say with just one mouth, can you imagine if they had 2 mouths? Right? Can you imagine if we had 4 hands and we were able to type twice as much on the internet and write twice as much negativity than we write already now and send twice as many bad emails that we regret later on? Can you imagine such a thing? Says Reb Shimon Yochai, although it's a very nice idea that we should have had two different mouths, one that's designated for Dvarim Shebekdusha, and another one that's set aside for all other aspects of life. As I'm living life and I see what's going on in the world, I say to myself, maybe it's better that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us only one. And while it's true that sometimes in that one mouth it becomes very confusing, you can have that same mouth talking Divrei Torah and then a few minutes later talking Dvarim B'Telem and talking things that one certainly should not have coming through their mouth, but still, says Rav Shimon Yochai, I still think the trade-off is better, because after all, it would have been far worse if we would have had two mouths. Fascinating comment. An amazing comment, and that's what I want to focus on today. It reminds me of a comment I saw many years ago. There's a sefer called Halachas Ketanos by Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz. Many years ago, he wrote the sefer, not a contemporary at all. And he was asked a question by one of his community members. You know, sometimes people send you a question and you say to yourself, that's a very interesting question that I actually would have never thought of. So I think this is one of them. This is a question, actually, if we're talking about questions that I never would have thought of, I've been getting bombarded with questions this week that I think is a fascinating area of halacha. Because of the formula crisis, this has nothing to do with our shir at all. Many women have reached out to ask, what do they do about expressing milk on Shabbos? And I think that that's an amazing question. Are they able to use a pump on Shabbos and to save the milk, not because they need it today, but because they want to freeze it, because there is no other option? There's not going to be formula next week in the supermarkets. And I think that that is an amazing question. Many different variations of that question. If you want to know what's Olal Shulcham Alachem this week, what all the Gedolim of our generation are now dealing with, it is this question. And I think it's a very, very fascinating and important one with many different details to it. I'm getting many blank stares. People don't know why I'm even asking such a shaila. It's a major shaila to pump milk and save it for a later time. It's not a simple issue at all for getting a crisis. But certainly when we have this issue now, it's a very, very important question to think about. And a woman even said to me that she was planning on expressing milk and giving it to someone else who doesn't have enough. And I think these are questions that we never imagined we would ever be thinking about. But that's a fascinating issue, nothing to do with our story here. But Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz was sent a shaila by one of the members of his community, and that question was, why were people not created with wings? You know, it would have been much nicer had we all been provided with wings, and we wouldn't have to walk anywhere, and we would be able to get to all the places we need to get to much faster. Okay, I guess that was on somebody's mind in his community. And Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz actually responds to the question, which is even more surprising. I would have just ignored the email. But he responds to the question. And he says, well, I'll tell you why. Because we already do so many terrible things with just two legs. Can you imagine if we had wings? We'd be able to fly to all these horrible places, come right back into reality where we started. It would be a disaster. So, I don't know. Interesting that over the generations, these are things that people considered and thought about. These aren't issues that I ever thought about. Why we don't have two mouths, why we don't have wings, or anything of that nature, but this is the comment of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. The importance of using one's speech properly cannot be overstated. The Vilna Gaon wrote an ethical will to his children, to his family members, before he passed away. And it's an amazing letter. If you have the opportunity to read it, you can Google it and find the whole letter in its entirety. I think it was also printed Rabbi Bamberger from Lander College. Everyone knows who he is. He's actually the brother of Judy Carroll from our neighborhood. So Rabbi Bamberger wrote a very interesting series of Art Scroll books, different things that he's spent time researching. One of the books that he's written is, I think it's called Great Jewish Letters, if I'm not mistaken. And in there, he goes through many famous letters of Jewish history and gives the context and the background. He gives pictures a little bit when they're relevant, tries to give an understanding as to what it is that's behind the letter. So I think he gets into this letter because there's so much to learn from the letter that was left by the Vilna Gaon, not just from his Torah, but from a very important artifact that we have. So the Vilna Gaon writes in the middle of this letter, it's a few pages long, but I just took out one part of it that I think is so enlightening, where he writes, Ad yom moso tzarech ha'adam lehisas lehisyaser. The Vilna Gaon writes, and don't stop in the middle of the sentence here, this is a number dalet. Vilna Gaon writes, until the end of one's life, tzarech ha'adam lehisyaser, one needs to make sure that they make themselves have pain. So really? So what does that mean? I should live a life of pain? He says, no. Lo betan nisim visigufim. I'm not saying that a person should fast every day and abstain from eating and never take care of themselves and never go to the gym and never feel that they're taking care of themselves in a proper way to feel good. No, that's not what I mean. Rak beresen piv v'ta'avasa. What I'm referring to, says the Vilna Gaon, is abstaining from using our mouths as much as we otherwise would. V'zehu yoser mikol hata'anios v'sigufim sheba'olam. Writes the Vilna Gaon, in my opinion, this is more worthwhile than fasting many fast days, and then one trying to make themselves suffer. V'chal rega v'rega she'adam chosim piv. It's hard to overcome the temptation to say something. You're in a room, and people are looking for a good laugh, and you have something that you can share, and people share things. Or you're in the room, which is the universe, the global universe. You're in a room called Twitter, and everyone's looking for a quick line, and you just share something, and it's funny, but it's not so funny. But it's hard to overcome that temptation when you know that you're going to have thousands of people who are going to like what you say and share it and tweet it. I don't have Twitter, but I see this all the time. And he says, "B'chol rega v'rega she'adam chosem piv." Every moment that a person overcomes that desire, that urge to just blurt something out and say it, "Zocha b'shvila la'ar haganus." She'ein malach u'briya yicholim neshayer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has such a special place set aside for that individual. She'ein kol malach u'briya yicholim neshayer, that human beings cannot even begin to fathom. V'yomer hakosev, and after all, he says, we're familiar with the pasuk, mi ha'isha chafitz chayim, ohiv yamim liros tov, netzor leshon chamiras, v'secha midaber mirma, u'bazer yechaper lo kolavo. Writes the Vilna Gaon, this will be able to overcome many of the mistakes that we made, in Nitzel Misha'ol Tachtis, Kemosha Kasuv, as the Torah says, Shomer Pivu Lishono, Shomer Mitzeras Nafsho. Then he quotes a pasuk, Hamaves V'Hachayim Biyad HaLashon. The difference between life and death, says the Vilna Gaon, can be the way we use our mouths. Look around the world and see how people have been destroyed because of something that somebody said about them, because of something that they said mistakenly, that they wish they could have taken back, but they don't have the ability to. Look how many marriages have been destroyed because of it. Look how many relationships with children have been destroyed, with parents, all because somebody wishes they wouldn't have said something that they said, and there's no way of taking it back. It's too late. Hamaves v'hachayim biyad halashon. Oy l'mi shememis atzmo b'shvil dibur echad. Ma yisron l'bal halashon. What have you gained from saying something? You regret it later on, and you ask yourself, why did I say that? I wish I didn't. U'lechol yesh refuah, for many different illnesses, there is a way, there is a remedy, there's a way to get around it, but he says, for this, for something that comes out of my mouth, unfortunately, there is no way of taking it back. V'ha'ikr, the bottom line is, shelo tedaber b'shum adam b'shvacho, v'kol shekem b'genuso, he says, just don't talk about people. Don't talk about the positive things they do, and that will lead you not to talk about the negative things they do. Just don't talk about people, says the Vilna Gaon. And this, to me, is the most shocking statement of the entire letter. Look what he says. V'af be'beis ha'knesses. While it's important, says the Vilna Gaon, to go to shul and to frequent the beis ha'knesses, tiktzar mi'od v'teitze. The Vilna Gaon writes, make your visits to the shul as succinct as possible. V'yoser tov l'hispala b'bayis. Perhaps, he says, it's better to daven at home. Why? Because we know what happens. You come to shul, and there's a kiddush, and everyone's sitting around. And what are you talking about at the kiddush? You're talking about everyone else, and how horrible the rabbi is, justifiably, and how horrible the person sitting next to you was, and why is this person doing that, and this piece of jewelry that one was wearing is fake, and that dress, really, they bought on sale here and there, and they're talking about everyone else's things. Stop talking, says the Vilna Gaon. Just don't go to shul. We're not talking about speaking in shul. Forgetting about that. We're talking about speaking in general. Writes the Vilna Gaon, I would suggest, daven at home, if that's the experience you're going to have. Then he says, "Ki bebeis haknesses e efsher lehinatzel mikina." People are looking at each other. People are wondering, how expensive was the jewelry? When did they get it? Why did they get it? Why do they have new clothing again? V'lishmo dvarim b'telem v'lashen hara v'ne'e nashim al zet. U'kumoshe amru af ha'shomei v'shosik. You sit by and you allow people to say this, even if you're not participating in the conversation. How do you allow such a discussion to go on in your presence? V'kol sekein b'shabbos v'yamtiv. Writes the Vilna Gaon, and certainly on Shabbos and Yom Tov, Shemes Asvim Ledaber, that people come around. I guess they had kiddushes in Vilna also. Yoser Tov Shelo Tispalo Klal. You know what? Just don't daven at all. Amazing. To me, it's amazing. Gam bitcha yoser tov shelo telech lebeis hakneses. He says, if you have daughters, maybe keep them home. Ki shamra begadim tovim umiskanes. Your daughter's going to go to shul. Look at all of her friends. See what everyone else is wearing. Misaperes bevayis. I guess your sons don't care. But your daughters, he says, are going to be very upset by this. And then they're going to start talking about others. You're going to have to defend them. You're going to have to explain it, why you don't have it, why they have it. He says, this is something that is not a refined way of living. Now, Reb Chaim Kanievsky actually points out, he says, yeah, it's true. People should stay home instead of davening in shul when the alternative is staying home and keeping your mouth shut. But he says today, when that's not the alternative, because you're going to just talk about all this around your dining room table anyway, you may as well go to shul. So this Vilna Gaon is a very nice comment. The reason why I brought it is because just the extreme that he takes it to is so telling. Where he says, to me, I'm prepared to say daven at home. It's more important to daven at home than for a person to come to shul and have this kind of experience. And I think that that is a fascinating comment that he makes. There's a story told that on one occasion, the Chafetz Chaim, who is best known, I should say, for many things that he did in his life, but probably most famously, he's known for his Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, which is why he's referred to as the Chafetz Chaim. His parents did not name him that at his bris. Right? So, Miha Isha Chafetz Chaim, Oiv Yamim Liras Tov Netzor Lashon Chameira. So he goes down in history as the Chafetz Chaim, which is such an amazing accomplishment that that was who he was. So the story goes that on one occasion he was traveling and he was there with a wagon driver who was bringing him to the next location. The wagon driver did not know who he was, and they started to travel, and the Chafetz Chaim thought it was the respectful thing to introduce himself and just have some kind of conversation. So he turns to this individual and he didn't tell him who he was, but he just started talking. He said, how you doing? How you feeling? No response, didn't say anything. Finally, a few hours into the journey, the Chafetz Chaim turns to him and he says, is there something wrong? Why is it that you don't talk? He says, you know, there's this new book, this new Sefer that just came out. It's called the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon. Ever since I read it and went through it, I can't bring myself to talk. I'm so scared. Because every time a person opens their mouth, who knows what they're doing? So the Chafetz Chaim turned to him and he said, you obviously didn't understand the objective of my book. You see, before you read the book, you had no right to open your mouth because you didn't know what to say. Now that you read the book is when you should be talking, because now you know how to speak. I taught you how to speak properly. The point of the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon was not that people should not speak to each other. The point is that there is a way that we have an ability to speak. There is a way to frame our speech. There's a refined way of speaking. There are things we should talk about. And the Chafetz Chaim said, now that the book is out there, you have the ability to speak. Before the book was written, I don't know how anyone ever talked. That's what the Chafetz Chaim writes. And I thought that that was a very beautiful story. Chafetz Chaim writes that in his mind, he finds it very strange. Why is it that the Torah specifically goes out of its way to warn us about Lashon Hara, to talk about all of those terrible things that come about from speaking Lashon Hara, and yet, when it comes to many other Midos Megunos, as he says, we know that a person who has an anger management issue, it's a terrible thing, it's destructive. So why doesn't the Torah talk about that? We have, in Chazal, they speak about all these different things. But why doesn't the Torah itself talk about these issues? Why doesn't the Torah talk about many negative character traits or behaviors? And the Chafetz Chaim says that the truth is that the overwhelmingly negative outcome that comes about from Lashon Hara is disproportionately worse than that which comes out from many other negative things that one can be involved in life. That, says the Chafetz Chaim, is something that he believes. And the Chafetz Chaim says that speaking Lashon Hara touches on so many other problems as well. If you go through the beginning of the Chafetz Chaim and the Hakdama to the book, to the Sefer, you'll see that he has so many different aspects that are touched upon every time one speaks Lashon Hara. It's almost like overwhelming to see it. So then the Chafetz Chaim says, you know, there are some who live life and say, Mutav shiyu shogigin ba'al yu mezidin. You know, let me just not focus on this issue at all, because whatever I don't know won't kill me. So if I don't know how terrible it is, maybe I just won't suffer the consequence. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, he has an amazing mashal to explain his feelings about such a person. He says, imagine you have somebody who's going out to travel down a road, and people advise this person, people say, look, there are very deep potholes there, there are many ditches along the way. If you don't bring a flashlight, you're going to fall in. And you're not familiar with this terrain. You really don't know where you're going. And along the way, there are many different places where you can have a major issue. He says, I have no problem. Bring me a big piece of cloth, a big piece of fabric. And they're all looking at him. What are you going to do with the fabric? Are you going to cover over every pottle every time you see it? The first pottle you see, you're going to cover it over and that's going to be it. What are you going to do the next one? He says, no, I'm going to tie the fabric over my eyes. This way, at least if I fall into the pothole and somebody comes to see, they won't laugh at me because I'll say I was blindfolded. What can I do? I fell in. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, what a fool. You didn't help yourself at all. You're not helping the cause. Now you're just going to fall into the pothole and you're not even going to know what to do because you don't know where to turn. Says the Chafetz Chaim, there are people who live life and just put the big piece of fabric over their eyes in many different aspects of life. And they pretend as if there's nothing wrong. Not only with this, but he says in many other areas as well. Somebody has a mental health issue, mental health crisis. So there's two ways to deal with it. You can either deal with it, or you can just put the blinders over, pretend there's nothing going on, kick it down the road, and at some point, who knows what's going to be. That's not the healthiest way, says the Chafetz Chaim, as we know. In many other aspects of our lives, it's just not the healthy way to deal with it. And he says that's not the healthy way to deal with this issue either. While it's overwhelming, and it's true that it's a difficult thing for a person to be mindful of the way that they speak, writes the Chafetz Chaim, he feels this is something that we have an obligation and we have a responsibility to focus on. There's a story that's told in the biography of the Chafetz Chaim that until he turned 70, he was sharoi bepachad. He was terrified. And people asked him, why are you so scared? What are you scared of? You're afraid of dying young? He said, no, I'm not afraid of dying young. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, he'll do. He said, what I'm afraid of is a chilul Hashem if I die young. What's the chilul Hashem? He said, I spent my whole life trying to convince people that Shmiras HaLashon is important. But everybody knows the Pasuk says, Mia isha chafetz chaim, oiv yamim liros tov. What's going to happen if the Chafetz Chaim dies at 50 years old? Everyone's going to say, obviously this isn't true. So he said, till he was 70, he was terrified of a chilul Hashem. He says, now at least there's no chilul Hashem if I die over 70. He lived till over 90. Chafetz Chaim said when he reached his 90th birthday, now it's not just that it's no longer a chilul Hashem, now it's a kiddush Hashem. Now it's proven that a person who's careful in the way that they speak will have an arichas yamin. And the Chafetz Chaim made a big seuda, a big celebration when he turned 90, not because he turned 90, but because he said, now he feels a great Kiddush Hashem came to the world. Because he can actually tell people that this remedy works. Mia isha Chafetz Chaim, oiv yamim liros tov. In the middle of Hilchas Lashon Hara, the Chafetz Chaim focuses on a issue that he points out, the pros and the cons of either direction. He says, there are some people who have no problem speaking ill feelings or sharing negative stories as long as it's not in the presence of the other individual. And they say, well, that person is not here. I would never say it in front of them. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, there's something terrible about saying something in front of a person. On the one hand, he says, you humiliate, you shame, you embarrass that person. So much so, he says, sometimes it leads to halbanas panim, which as we know, when somebody is embarrassed, that's considered to be a very severe transgression, a very serious avera. On the other hand, he says, the Torah says, Arur make re'ehu vasaser. The Torah says, if you go in private and confidentially, in a private setting, you share something negative about another person, that's something that the individual doesn't even have the opportunity to defend. And that's something very problematic. So the Chafetz Chaim writes, don't think that one is better than the other. He said, both of them are pretty bad. Whether you're in front of the person or you're not in front of the person, either one of them is something that is considered to be very severe. Now, the Chafetz Chaim asks what I believe is a very relatable question, the way I see it. Chafetz Chaim says, we're told that we're not supposed to be mekabel lashon hara. So again, I'm a good person. I'm not. But let's say I was a good person, and I'm really careful, and I don't speak lashon hara. I can be as careful as I can be, but other people sometimes say things in my presence. So what's my opportunity, what's my responsibility on those occasions? So we all know the responsibility is you shouldn't be mekabel lashon hara. You shouldn't believe that it's true. That's very hard. Somebody comes to me and tells me that there's a traffic jam a few blocks away. I believe what they say. I don't have to go check it out. They show me a picture. I believe it. Somebody comes to me and says that it's worthwhile to invest in this property. Well, it's a very close friend. I trust them in many other things. They have a great track record. I'm going to trust them. So if I trust somebody in every other aspect of my life, suddenly they come to me and tell me a negative story about somebody else. Suddenly I'm not supposed to trust them? How am I supposed to train myself not to trust other people, not to be makabel when they say something negative about another individual? I think that's a really good question. Just a very simple question. And the Chafetz Chaim says as follows. Look at number A on the second side of the page. where he gives what he believes is the answer. Imagine, he says. And the example that the Chafetz Chaim gives, I think, is not so relatable to the image I would have conjured up in my mind. So let me say it my way, and then we'll see the way he says it. Imagine, he says, somebody approaches you. I was just in Manhattan on Sunday. The homeless crisis is out of control. We all know. I was in L.A. last week in the airport. The homeless crisis is out of control there too. In the airport. You can't walk through the airport. There are homeless people sleeping all over the place. Yeah. I was just trying to find one bench to sit down on in between my flights, but couldn't find one. So imagine you have a drug addict, a homeless individual who has vomit all over themselves. Okay? Let's pile on to that imagery. Comes over to you and tells you some kind of piece of information. Would you even pay attention for a moment to what it is that that individual was sharing with you? You would run away as fast as you could. Why? Because you're not, like the Gemara says, you're not oseg b'yeshuva shel olam. You're not doing anything beneficial for society in the way that you're living. I have no interest in what you're sharing with me. I don't think I have anything to gain from the information you're sharing. And probably it's incoherent. What you're sharing has no basis in reality at all. So I really wouldn't pay attention if someone like that came over and told me anything. Even if they told me something that seemed to be very important to me. They said you should invest in this hedge fund because they really know how to manage money very well. I mean, you think I would go home and even look it up? I would ignore them entirely. I wouldn't even check if the hedge funds existed. Now here writes the Chafetz Chaim. Ilu haya hamisaper, that's the way I would have said it. Chafetz Chaim was a big tzaddik, as we know. So he says it the other way. Ilu haya hamisaper love shatnes, umakif pa'as rosho v'zakanam. Imagine, writes the Chafetz Chaim, someone comes over to you and says some kind of information, but you see that they're wearing shatnes. So instead of being homeless and on drugs, you see that this person is wearing shatnes, or that they use a razor to shave their face instead of an acceptable shaver. Now again, we've met many such people, and we've encountered them, and we've spoken to them. In the Chafetz Chaim's mind, that was like the wildest person he would ever meet, is somebody who's going to wear shatnes. So writes the Chafetz Chaim, imagine, that person tells me something negative about another individual, I wouldn't even pay attention. I mean, come on. Look what kind of person you are. You're a homeless. You're doing nothing good in the world. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, Kishem shehufkar etzlo shari surei Torah, the same way this person is not paying attention to the Isser of Shatnez or anything else, kach bevadei hufkar etzlo Isser ha-sheker. You think this person tells the truth? I don't believe anything you say. Why? Because you're not careful about anything else. Why should I think that you're careful about this aspect of your life? Im Kain, he says, Hu adin b'misha mesaper lashon hara. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, it's the same thing when it comes to someone who talks lashon hara. If that person goes around and violates the Isra of lo selech rachel be'amecha, shu chashud gam l'shaker, b'vada ein laham en shesipur emes. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, why would you in your right mind believe someone when they come and tell you a terrible story about another individual? The person has just proven that they are the homeless one in the street. You're the worst person out there. Why would I ever trust you? Not because the Torah says not to trust you, but why would I ever put my trust in a person like you? Such an amazing way to frame this question. And he says, this is the way that a person can try to train themselves not to be mekabel lashon hara. When you think about it that way, when you think about the fact that this person is really doing nothing positive for the world right now, and therefore why would I even accept anything they're saying as fact? Why would I accept anything they're saying as even a suspicion? There's nothing about it that's worth listening to. The same way it's not worth us listening to other people who we know are not worth listening to at all. Aside from that, the Chafetz Chaim points out something very fascinating, and that is, in his opinion, he says, one who engages in spreading ill will, one who uses their mouth for those kinds of purposes, he says, Hare muchach she'eno mitzapeh u'mechake labiach Mashiach tzidkenu. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, it's clear to me that that individual does not believe in the coming of Mashiach. What is the connection between the two? So the Chafetz Chaim says, after all, we know that Sinas Chinam is what brought about the Churban Beis HaMikdash. If that's what brought about the Churban, then that's what we need to repair to bring back a Beis HaMikdash. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that is the Ma'akev HaGadol Shel HaGeula. That is the greatest holdup for the ultimate redemption. And this person doesn't seem to appreciate that. It seems not only they're violating the obvious transgressions of Lashon Hara, but he says, besides for that, The person also shows that they don't believe in the coming of Mashiach. And I was very taken by that. Chafetz Chaim writes in the Hakdama, in the introduction to his Sefer, you know, every day we daven in Shmona Esrei, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for bracha, for blessings in our lives. So the way the Chafetz Chaim frames it is, he doesn't say this example, but imagine you have a diabetic, and a diabetic goes one day and eats an excessive amount of sugar, goes to the candy store, just starts eating everything. And then they wonder why, when they test themselves later on, their numbers are out of whack. I mean, it's no wonder. Look the way you ate today. That was not a very responsible way to eat. You can take all the medication in the world. The medication is not going to help if you continue to behave this way. If you're doing things to destroy your life, it doesn't help to do things in the opposite direction to try to pull it back. You have to learn how to monitor your own behavior. You have to learn how to do things in the right proportion and in a healthy way. So the Chafetz Chaim writes, it's very interesting to me that people daven every day and they ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all kinds of things and they want blessings in their lives. But he says, it's like the diabetic who just goes and eats sugar all day. What do you think is going to happen? So writes the Chafetz Chaim here, let's read it. In the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, he writes, Upele hu be'enai. Shateva b'nei Adam, lechapes sgulos ubrachos me'anashim gedolim lehatzlacha ala parnasa. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, we run around the world for skulos. We go to holy people. We want them to daven on our behalf. We ask them for some kind of skula. Give us something we can hold on to. I don't know. I don't run around to these people. Neither do my rabbein. But some people do. Lots of people do, I should say. And I don't know. I don't believe in these things. What can I say? That's just not the place where I came from. Recently, when I was in Eretz Yisrael a few months ago, somebody brought me to an individual in Yerushalayim. I did not ask for this meeting, this acquaintance, but I found myself in the room of somebody who claims to know something, I don't know. Anyway, this family is talking to him. Then he sees me standing on the side. He says, "Nu, so would you like a bracha for your children?" I said, "Okay, once I'm here, I guess so." So he says, "Please write down everyone's names." I said, "Okay, a bracha never hurts, as long as you're not going to ask me anything else. I'm not engaging." So I write down everyone's names. He starts looking through the names. And he starts telling me the personality of each of my children. And he was 100% right. Then he looks at my wife's name. And he says something, you know, "You should call her," he says, "because this is bothering her." So I came home and I called my father. I'm like, "Listen, you know, I didn't grow up on this. I don't know what this is. But what do I make of this?" And he said, "I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. But there is something out there. People do this, right?" So I said to my father, "Although we don't do these things, somebody is going through a very difficult time. A young lady needs a shidduch." As I said last week, you know, in Australia there's a shidduch crisis the other way. How amazing is that? There's no girls for the guys to marry. Fascinating. I told him, "Send all the guys to America. We'll take care of them in a few weeks." But anyway, so a young woman needs a shidduch. Somebody who, a couple is struggling with infertility, wants to have a child. Someone needs a parnasa. Would you tell me not to send them to such a person to give them an etzah? Obviously, there's something there. He said, "Look, how can you ever tell anyone not to do something? They can do whatever they want." So it was interesting. But writes the Chafetz Chaim, in his time, people also were into all these skulas, and they were running around, and they were wearing kameyas, and they were saying en kelokenu, and they were baking challah, all these things, right? Very nice. So the Chafetz Chaim says, it's all wonderful, it's all beautiful. But he says, they run around the world from anashim gedolim lehatzlach ala parnasa. Ma yo'ilu, says the Chafetz Chaim, what is any of it going to help? Kol hasgulas v'habrachas, all of this, what is it going to help? Im chas v'shalom, hu murgol b'zeh hached shalashen hara. What is any of this going to help if they're not careful with the way they speak? Now, why is one connected to the other? Of course, people do avera. So someone does an avera, they're not entitled to be blessed. They're not entitled to have anything good in their lives. Of course they are. We all make mistakes. So what does he mean? Why is it so bad if a person wants to have blessing in their life and yet they're speaking Lashon Hara? He explains. After all, he says, Hare yesh azeh arur mefurish b'torah. The Torah itself says, If you behave in such a way, you will not be blessed. Arur makere eyo basasa. The Torah says explicitly, a person who says negative things about others in private is considered to be cursed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself says you're cursed. Therefore, writes the Chafetz Chaim, the way I see it is, this is the diabetic going into the candy store and eating candy, wondering why they're sick. This is exactly why. Says the Chafetz Chaim, you want bracha, you want a skula, you want something good? How can any of that work when at the same time you have this cloud over your head of Arur Makar Re'eo Basasar HaKadosh Baruch Hu promise you're going to be cursed? How can anything else work when the Ribbono Shel Olam himself said that you're going to have that lingering over yourself? So I think that that's a very important comment of the Chafetz Chaim. The story of the Chafetz Chaim is he was once traveling somewhere and there was somebody next to him on the train. And they were having a whole discussion, and this individual did not know that it was the Chafetz Chaim sitting next to him. And he starts talking about, do you know, did you hear, there's a great individual by the name of the Chafetz Chaim, by the name of Yisrael Meir from Radin. And the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, tone it down, he's not as great as you think he is, and he's not as special as you may have imagined, I've met him before. And the man was so upset, and he was screaming at the Chafetz Chaim, how can he talk like that? This is the leader of our generation, he's the greatest person in our community. Anyway, this only could have worked before the internet and before newspapers. People didn't know what somebody else looked like. I remember when I once met a woman from Satmar, a very prominent woman from Satmar, who asked that she wanted to meet Rabbi Schechter. Now, she had no idea that I was, at the time, 29 years old and clean-shaven, and she wanted to meet, so we met somewhere, and I said to her, she's like, where's Rabbi Schechter? And it was pretty funny. I said, you know, it's interesting. You listen to my shiurim all the time. You have no idea what you're listening to because it's, I guess my picture is blocked out also. So sometimes you hear people, you have no idea who they are. You don't know what they look like. So this person heard about the Chafetz Chaim. He had no idea who the individual in question was. Finally, they get there. They get off the train and they see there's a big reception there. And obviously everyone in town came to greet the Chafetz Chaim. And this man is so ashamed, he's so embarrassed. How did he speak to the Chafetz Chaim this way? He walks over to him and he says, I beg your pardon, but I feel so ashamed that I spoke to you in that way. I was actually trying to say good things about the Chafetz Chaim. You were the one who was stopping me from saying good things about you. And then I was yelling at you. Very uncomfortable exchange. And he says, I just want to ask Mechila. The Chafetz Chaim says, no, I learned something very important from you. You see, I wrote a whole Sefer Shmiras HaLashon Chafetz Chaim. And never did it dawn on me that there's an extra halacha, and that is I'm not allowed to say Lashon Hara about myself either. Never dawned on me to think such a thing. But look what happens. You speak negatively about yourself, and look what happens. It causes other people to do bad things. So he says, I learned something from you, and I have to thank you. And the Chafetz Chaim profusely thanked this individual. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, from here you learn that one is not allowed to talk Lashon Hara not only about others, but even about themselves. To say self-deprecating humor, obviously in good jest, is okay. But to say negative stories about oneself in their past is something that we shouldn't do. Unless others can learn from it, what is it that we're sharing that for? In fact, Rav Soloveitchik, my father often quotes that Rav Soloveitchik felt very strongly about this point. He said, we have a concept in the Gemara of Maris Ayin. So we know that one is not allowed to do something that is prohibited. What if I'm doing something that's permissible, but others who see what I'm doing, I'm going to misinterpret it, and they're going to think that I'm doing something wrong. So the Gemara says, I'm not allowed to do that either. Not only because maybe they will learn from me and do the same in their own lives, but also because they're going to think negatively about me. So Rav Soloveitchik asks, who cares what they think? Let them think whatever they want. I have enough self-confidence. I don't care. It shouldn't bother me. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, because my reputation is something that's valuable. And I don't have a right to just be flippant about my reputation. I don't have a right to say, well, let people think whatever they want, it doesn't bother me. That's not the right way to live life. We have to value the reputation that we have built, and that's something that needs to be upheld. It's something that we don't have a right to just disregard and laugh off. So Chafetz Chaim then gets stuck with a little bit of a question. The Navi Yeshaya, in one of the nevuahs that he has, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him an amazing inner workings of the world, and he says, Ki ish tmei svasayim anochi, the Navi Yeshaya says, I don't know why I was privileged to see everything you showed me. After all, he says, ish tmei svasayim anochi, I am an individual who has contaminated lips. Uvesoch am tmei svasayim anochi yoshev. And he said, I'm not only the one who's contaminated myself, I live in a contaminated culture. So the Chafetz Chaim points out that the Navi there obviously admonishes himself, and he says that, I don't think that I'm worthy of such a nevuah, because after all, I see the way I live my own life, and I see the way my community lives their lives. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu came back to him and he said, you want to talk about yourself, that's fine, but don't talk negatively about your community. Don't say, B'socham t'meis v'asayim anochi yoshev. What right do you have to say such a thing? Well, says the Chafetz Chaim, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu only say that? Why did Ribono Shalom say, you don't have a right to talk about your community? What about, you don't have a right to talk about yourself? How can you say that about yourself? So the Chafetz Chaim gets stuck on that question a little. He says, well, maybe it gives us pause to wonder, is it really a problem, a prohibition of Lashon Hara to talk about myself? After all, the Navi Yeshaya spoke about himself and God seemed to have no problem at all. So he gets into the details of that question. How do you answer it? How do you reconcile? But the bottom line is the Chafetz Chaim comes to the conclusion that he thinks not only is there a prohibition to speak Lashon Hara about others, but even to speak about oneself is also going to be a problem. What is clear is that Lashon Hara is clearly something dangerous that we should stay away from. We should try not to engage in it to the best of our ability, but in the end of the day, we are all human beings. And sometimes we say things that we regret, and sometimes we say things that we should not have said. Does that mean all of us are going to have a horrible afterlife? Is that really what the bottom line of all this is? No. So the Chafetz Chaim points out that there's a difference between all of the horrific ends that the Gemara speaks about for one who speaks Lashon Hara, and somebody who makes a mistake. Says the Chafetz Chaim, everything that Chazal described, the horrific outcome of one who's a Baal Lashon Hara, is only for someone who he refers to as a Baal Lashon Hara. What does a Baal Lashon Hara mean? Chafetz Chaim writes, there's a difference between someone who makes a mistake and says something negative, and somebody who embodies Lashon Hara, somebody who spends their time doing this. And I really think, I know I've said it so many times, but I really think the internet is a cesspool of this. Because it's so easy to just continuously write things and say things and make comments with no accountability. Nobody's going to call you out for it because nobody knows who you are. You can anonymously write anything about anyone and destroy their lives. And there's no end to it. And it's exciting and it's fun. And you see how many people see it and it gets all over the world within minutes. People want to be universal. People want to be global. We live in a big world. It's an amazing feeling. It's nice. I understand it. But they use that in such a negative way, and says the Chafetz Chaim that it's only one who is a Baal Lashon Hara. Let's see what he says. Number Zion. Kimo Elu Sheregilim Tamid Leishev Ulesaper. If you have someone who makes this into a habit to sit around with friends and to talk, Kach V'Kach Maisa Ploni, this is what happened down the block, Kach V'Kach Asu Avosav, this is the kind of family he comes from, Kach V'Kach Shamati Alav, this is what I heard they do in their business, this is what I heard they do in their home, this is what's going on behind closed doors, V'hu Dvarim Shalganus Anashim Elu, writes the Chafetz Chaim, it is these people, Nikraim B'fi Chazal, Baalei Lashon Hara. It is those people, he says, who are considered the Baalei Lashon Hara. V'onshan harbe yoser gadol acharei shebeshat nafsham v'zadon libam overim al toras Hashem. However, writes the Chafetz Chaim, somebody who unfortunately makes a mistake, somebody who slips up, says something wrong, they shouldn't have said, okay, so it's the same way we do other averus, it's the same way we do other things wrong. The extreme consequence of a Baal Lashon Hara is only for someone who is a Baal Lashon Hara, someone who makes a business out of this, someone who makes a habit out of it and is busy with this all the time. One final point on this before we close. The Chafetz Chaim makes a very valuable comment, and that is, sometimes, he says, people think, as long as I'm not talking about an individual, it's not really so bad. And he says people are very quick to write off a community. You hear about something in another shul, and you say, I can't stand that shul. They're all like this. We've all heard such comments. You hear about another community, I can't stand the way they do things there. Nobody pays taxes in that community. I was actually talking to a good friend of mine yesterday who is making a wedding. And he told me he went to a florist and he was talking to this florist about an arrangement for his child's wedding. I'm not going to say who the florist is or who the individual is. Very prominent individual. And he said that he was engaging the florist in all the different details of what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, how much it's going to cost. And the florist said, okay, we only take cash. So he said, why do you only take cash? Well, he said, well, we don't pay taxes. So he said to him, no, I'm more comfortable if you charge the taxes and I can pay cash also. But he said, I'm going to pay by credit card or by check, but I'm going to pay the taxes. The man stops him He says, I do 700 Jewish weddings a year. That's a lot of weddings. He says, I do 700 Jewish weddings a year. You're the second person in my entire career who's ever asked to pay taxes. So this person said, I think the first is probably your father or one of his students. But he said, how can that be? 700 people a year are making weddings. Not one of them is concerned about the taxes. Interesting. So we asked him, what's the rationale? He said, you're an Erlich Yid and everything else you do. You go to shul every day. You keep Shabbos. So why are you not worried about stealing? So he says to him, no, you got it all wrong. I went to my Rav. I asked him when I started the business. I asked him, do I have to pay taxes? The rabbi said, pay taxes? What are you kidding me? He says, the rich people in Manhattan have to pay the taxes. Here where we live, I just ruled it out. They don't live in Manhattan. Here where we live, he says, they pick up the garbage once in a while. All right, so we have to pay a little bit. So he says, every year you send a little bit in for the taxes and that's good enough for the services you get. Okay, it's criminal, kind of. I was actually talking to this person and I said, we have a tendency to just say, all these people from that community, it's just the way they are. It's just the way they are. It's so wrong. First of all, it's not the guy's fault. This is what his rabbi's telling him. So the rabbi's out of his mind. It's not his fault. He asked the shayla. He got a horrible answer. Feel bad for him. But that's the answer that he got. So what's he supposed to do? It's the same way in any other community. If a rabbi gives a wrong psak, so he's wrong, but the person is not to blame for doing wrong. So sometimes the Chafetz Chaim writes, we write off a whole community or a whole kehila or a group of people because they don't do exactly what we do. Because, and let's be honest, the same way this guy doesn't pay taxes, we also have our things that we don't do properly. It's okay. It offsets. We all have our issues. We all have things that we can improve on. And they're no worse off for doing that than we are for doing other things. Everybody has their things. So, writes the Chafetz Chaim, but sometimes people mistakenly think, as long as I'm not talking about an individual, it's not a problem. I'm not singling anybody out. I'm not saying I don't like this person. I'm not saying that I don't agree with that person. I'm not saying anything about personal issues that I have with any individual in the community. I'm saying a blanket statement, writes the Chafetz Chaim, in some way, that is much worse. Why is it worse? Because he says, if I speak Lashon Hara about a person, about an individual, there's always the opportunity at some point to do tshuva. There's always the opportunity to somehow make good with that individual, which is actually a big discussion in the poskim. If I speak Lashon Hara privately about a person, how can I do tshuva? What should I do? I should go to that person and say, by the way, I just want you to know, I spoke negatively about you. It's going to make the situation worse. So now, for my own tshuva, I should go and embarrass the person by telling them what I said about them? So that's a big discussion in the poskim. How do you deal with that? So leaving that aside, how do you deal with tshuva in general for speaking Lashon Hara? But outside of that, writes the Chafetz Chaim, somebody who speaks negatively about an entire community or about a group of people, you're stuck. What are you going to do? Get up in the shul on Shabbos, make a clap on the bima, and ask everyone mechila? I mean, it's not going to happen. So what are you going to do? How can you ever do tshuva for such a thing? Similar to what the Rambam writes, when a person is gozel asarabim, if I steal something from an individual, there's always the opportunity to pay it back. Now, one should never steal and say, I'll pay it back later. That's not allowed. But if someone is involved in stealing, there's a way to undo the harm that was caused. What happens if gozel asarabim? What happens if I run a business, I take a lot of people's money, and it turns out I don't know how to give the money back because I took from so many people along the way, I don't even keep track anymore? Or other ways that that can manifest itself. What happens when I do something negative to a tzibur? How do I outdo the harm that I've caused? How do I undo it? So the Gemara actually says, gazel es harabim, if I steal from public funds, whatever that might mean, meaning I cheat on my taxes, it's a great example. I cheat on my taxes, which is stealing from a public fund, correct? Because those taxes should have been allocated in a certain way, and as a result of somebody not paying taxes, now all of us have to pay more. I assume that's the way it works, right? When they make the annual budgets, I assume at some point it's going to catch up with us. So that's gazel es harabim. So the Gemara says, so how does that work? What do you do? So the Gemara says, if you want to do tshuva for being gazel es harabim, the way to do it is you should invest the money in etzarech rabim. Go build a mikveh in the community. Give your money toward the mikveh. Give your money toward hatzela. Give your money to help pave the highways. Give your money to the garbage collectors in order that they should be able to have the job done efficiently that's going to benefit the entire community who you stole from. So that's a way to get out of Gazal Asa Rabin, by benefiting the Rabin with the money that you stole. Okay, that's one way to do it. Somebody once came to me and said he feels he's Gazal Asa Rabin, whatever it may be. He decided he was going to donate 500 sederim to the Kotel. Interesting idea. He said, over time, every single member of my community is going to use my sitter when he goes there, so I'm helping him out. In some way, I'm reinvesting in the community by doing that. So again, what the specifics are, where you're supposed to give it, how you give it, I don't know, it's a good question. But be it as it may, the Gemara says there is a formula for how to deal with that problem. Here, writes the Chafetz Chaim, what kind of formula is there? What are you going to do? How can you undo the harm that you've caused? How can you undo the negativity that you have spread by sharing the stories that you've shared, not about an individual, but about a kehila, about a community, about a group of people? And that, says the Chafetz Chaim, is something that is very, very difficult. I did see that Reb Chaim Kanievsky writes in one of his svarim that perhaps the way around it is I should just be mispalo, that all of them should be mochelmi. That's the easiest way around it. I hope that on Erev Yom Kippur they all say the tefillah zaka, and they all say with a full heart that they have no hard feelings toward me, and I hope it's real. So he says maybe that's the best etza, but that's a little bit of a cop-out, but it's an interesting point that is raised regardless by the Chafetz Chaim here. He says it's important to make mention of the fact that it's not just on an individual, but certainly on a kehila or on a group of people as well. Amir Tashem, next week maybe we'll continue, maybe not, I don't know, we'll see. But I wish everyone a wonderful day.